Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I am your host, John Scott. I appreciate you joining me today on a nice, lovely July 7th morning. It's been a whirlwind for me. I took a couple weeks off. I needed a little mental break. I needed a physical break and took the family to Wisconsin for a nice camping trip, an honest to God camping trip where we took a tent, we pitched a tent, we camped. The kids had a little music camp that they went to. And the wife and I just unplugged. There was no phones. There was no distractions. There was not that there is any ever TVs. It's a lifestyle choice, as I haven't said in a while, but no TVs, no anything. And it was fantastic. The camping site we went to had this great water park, and we swam, and we just relaxed. You know what I mean? And it was a good unplug. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can tell I'm a pretty tanned cat right now, and it's honestly annoying. I go and see people I haven't seen in a week or so, and they go, "Ooh, you got some sun. You look tan. Yes, I got some sun. I'm typically very pasty white, and when I do go out in the sun, I tend to tan pretty quickly. So it actually meshes well with my gray hair, and I'm looking very tanned and very healthy right now. So yeah, if you're not watching on YouTube, you're missing out because I'm looking not so shabby right now. But while I was on vacation, you know, typically in the NHL the last 5 years, after the Stanley Cup is wrapped up, people gear up for the draft, they gear up for free agency, and everyone's excited, right? We're like a little kid at a candy store. July 1st in Canada is a big deal. You want to see what your team is going to do, what direction you're going to take. Are you going to take a swing and go after the, you know, the high-end guy, the superstar? What dollars are going to be thrown around? At the draft, you want to see trades. You want to see trades moving up and down. You want to see some movement, your team making a swing. Boom, like what's this? Kevin Costner on draft day, the Cleveland Browns. It was a good day. You want to see that kind of action. But over the last 3-4 years, there's been nothing of that. There's been no consequential moves. All the exciting superstars that are projected to hit unrestricted free agency, they get gobbled up before they get traded and signed, or signed and traded, or they'll re-sign with their team. So that's out the window. No big trades at the draft. I used to do this thing with Bleacher Report, and I would sit there and try to fill time for hours on end because nothing exciting ever happened. So coming into this, you know, 2026 iteration of the draft and free agency, I thought, you know what? Not even going to deal with it. I'll recap everything when I come back. It'll be exciting, but you're not going to miss out on much. Well, lo and behold, I am checking my phone at night in my tent, and I'm just, you know, as I do casually, I'm just like, damn, there's, you know, I took a couple days off. I'm like, there's some trades. Wow, Brady Tkachuk got traded. Wow, look at that. Okay. Oh, there's some signings. Wow, look at that. Oh, and there's more trades. And I'm just thinking to myself, what the hell is happening with the NHL? It was one after the other after the other. It was amazing the amount of movement that happened in the last 2 weeks. And then the free agency hits. And there's more wild stuff that goes on. And there's offer sheets. And there's bad signings. And there's trades in Buffalo and Washington and Chicago. And all this great stuff is happening. And I can't even talk about it. And so, mea culpa, I'm sorry. I wish I would have been here able, not that you care about what I say too much, but, you know, I feel a minor responsibility to report on the news for my listeners and my friends and the people who listen to the show. So I'm sorry. But I'm back. I'm going to try to make amends for this. My first podcast back, you know, there's a million things to talk about. I'm going to talk about two of my former teams and another team in California that's going through just an agonizing decision that they have to make, the Anaheim Ducks with Leo Carlson and the offer sheet. But first, I want to talk about two teams, two of my former teams. And we'll lump in the Anaheim Ducks in here in a second because they're an inevitable decision that they will make on Leo Carlson. That'll be a franchise-altering decision, to be honest with you. That was predicated by some mismanagement by Pat Verbeek and the upper echelon with the Anaheim Ducks because they just didn't get on it. I think they took too long to make a decision. So we're going to start with the Chicago Blackhawks and the San Jose Sharks first. And the reason I start with these two teams is because they're very similar. And just like we talked about the Buffalo Sabres and the Ottawa Senators and the Detroit Red Wings of old. Oh, these are the three teams that are, you know, building and they have the same time frame for success and this, that, and the other thing. That can be said about the Chicago Blackhawks and the San Jose Sharks. Two similar type teams, very long, you know, decade and a half time span of success. Obviously, Chicago wins three Stanley Cups and then San Jose Sharks makes a Stanley Cup and they they have a sustained length of time where they're just one of the top teams in the NHL. With that, inevitably, you know, NHL seasons and teams, they ebb and flow. You're not really good for a long time, and then you have to rebuild and you have to get good again. Those two teams lasted a little bit longer than most teams typically do, but as you near the end of that high reign that you're on in the Western Conference, you have to come down to earth, and those two teams just came down to earth at the same time. Gone are the days for the Chicago Blackhawks when you have Hossa and Seabrook and Keith and Scott and Taves and Kane. Those days are gone. And the same can be said with the San Jose Sharks. Gone are the days when you have Thornton and Marlowe and Pavelski and Scott and Couture and Burns and all these great all-star caliber players. Now you have to rebuild. You have to retool. And the beautiful thing about these two franchises is they hired two new GMs. You didn't fire Doug Wilson and Stan Bowman and then bring in, you know, one of the guys you pick out of the bin. Okay, we're getting rid of another GM. We have to bring someone else in. Who are we going to get now to? Let's get a Ken Holland. Let's get a Babcock. Let's get these guys who have GM'd a million teams, and there's nothing new that you're going to get from them. You know what you're getting from these GMs. They picked two new GMs. Mike Greer, obviously a former San Jose Shark player, very familiar with the organization, well-respected in the hockey spheres. And then Kyle Davidson, I don't know where this guy came from. But I'm guessing he had some kind of scouting background, some kind of analytical background, some kind of whatever background. He gets named the GM for the Chicago Blackhawks. So two unknowns, two first-timers, trying to get these franchises back to the glory days that they once had, you know, in the early 2000s. So Mike Greer, he steps into the GM position. Same year, by the way. These two guys took over, 2022. So they've been GMs for 4 or 5 years now. He steps into the unenviable situation of having bad contracts. Bad contracts with a lot of term. We're talking, you know, Brent Burns is of the world, Erik Karlsson, Marc-Edouard Vlasic, Justin Braun. You got Jumbo lumped in here. You got Couture. You got Hurdle. Some good contracts, but mostly guys who are a little long in the tooth, who aren't producing up to the number that they're getting paid, and who have full no-move clauses. I saw a stat recently comparing all the four major sports leagues, and the guys who have no move clauses, we're talking full no move clauses. In the NBA, it was like 10, 15 guys. In the NFL, I think it was like two. In the NBA, what is the other one? MLB, I don't think anybody has a full no move clause, maybe a couple. And in the NHL, it was like almost 250 guys have that no move clause associated with their contract at some point in the deal. So it's insane how hockey just has the market cornered on no move clauses. I don't know how or when that started. And I'm a player first type guy, but I feel like that needs to stop. I don't know if anybody else agrees with me, but it's frustrating when I look at a team and I'm trying to figure out what to do and where we go. And then it's just like, no move, no move, no move, no move, limited move, limited move. And it's like, well, how the hell am I supposed to GM if I can't do anything? So moving on, Mike Greer, we're getting back to what I was talking about. Mike Greer takes over this team, and it's like everybody has no move clauses. Everybody is just staunchly stuck in San Jose, and Mike Greer has to figure out what to do. So what do? You just start to lose. You start to jettison bad contracts and wrapping them up with draft picks to try to entice other GMs to take these contracts. If you're lucky, you can wrap up an Erik Karlsson contract and get a first rounder in return. And Mike Greer did that. Year one, year two, year three, you're starting to revamp this roster. You're starting to get rid of the bad contracts, and you're starting to sign vets to go along with the young players that you're drafting. You're drafting a Will Smith. You're getting a Quentin Musty. You're getting a Sam Dickinson. You're getting a Michael Meese. You're winning the lottery. And all of a sudden, of course, the big get in 2024 was Macklin Celebrini. But to go with these young players, it's not like he went scorched earth on the talent. He was very calculated when he was bringing in these young guys and bringing them up, not to ruin them. Because I've seen young players get ruined early on by just being thrust into a position where, A, you don't have support around you, or B, you're put into a situation where you don't get the ice time. So Mike Greer was very smart with who he signed and who he surrounded these players with. So Macklin Celebrini comes into the league. He's not skating with nobodies, and he's not buried on the depth chart. He gets to skate with Mikael Granlund. You got Fabian Zetterlund. You got Tyler Toffoli, who was signed there. You have William Eklund, who's a young forward. You have a good mix of youth. you have a good mix of veterans, and you have a good mix of talent to just nurture and build up these young players who will be the core of your franchise, if not now, pretty soon. And so Macklin Celebrini doesn't have to come in and just be the target of everybody as the number one overall pick. He gets to be maybe the second line power play. He gets to maybe just cede the final shot to a Tyler Toffoli or a Mikael Granlund. He gets to just learn from these guys. He's not the guy coming right out of the gate. And we'll talk about that with the Chicago Blackhawks. So it's such a benefit for these high-end, especially high-end forwards, to come in and have that protection, have that insulation where you're just not thrust into in front of the camera because you already have so much pressure. And if you have to just all of a sudden save this franchise, save this team, and you're the only guy on the roster, it's impossible to succeed. I remember when I was in Minnesota, it was Benoit Pouliot. His career got ruined a little bit because he was thrust in that situation. When I was in Buffalo, there was a young kid, Mikhail, what was his name? Not Grabowski, Grigorenko. I think he was like a 6th or 7th overall pick out of Russia. They threw him right in the first line. And he just got eaten alive. And then he played his 9 games, so he was stuck on the team. And then by the end of the season, he was playing on the 3rd and 4th line. And it ruined his career. Absolutely ruined it. He went to Russia. He still has a great career in Russia, but he could have been a really good, solid NHL player if they would have just given him some players to play with, A. And then if it wasn't succeeding, just let him go on the second line and learn the NHL game. And Mike Greer has done that with Macklin Celebrini. Yes, he's better than a Mikhail Grigorenko and pretty much everybody else in the NHL. But does he get to the heights that he's at now if he doesn't have the first year to just kind of learn the NHL and to not be thrust into a situation where it's like, shit, I'm the guy. No. Like, he had Eklund, he had Toffoli, he had Granlund, he had Zetterlund, he had Alexander Weinberg. Like, he had guys who knew how to play the game. And you contrast that with Connor Bedard, his first season in the NHL, he had nobody. Absolutely nobody. And I was doing his games for NBC, and I felt bad for the kid. I felt absolutely terrible for this kid because he comes into the NHL, an 18-year-old kid, and he has a huge target on his back. You think, you know, we're going to ease him into this. No, he's playing 20-some minutes a game. He's being targeted by every team's top line, every team's best set of defensemen. He's playing with East Coast players. He's playing with waiver wire pickups. He's playing with first round draft picks who are just flamed out in Lucas Reichel. Like, he's playing with Ryan Donatos and Jason Dickinson and Nick Foligno and Philip Kurashev. No offense to those guys. Like, Colin Blackwell played on his line for a little bit. No offense to these players. Andreas Athanasiou. Like, which one of those guys is a legit third-line player in the NHL? Maybe Ryan Donato. He's kind of rounded out. He's a decent NHL player because he has a cannon for a shot. But there are nights when I would look at this roster and I'd go, this is an East Coast team. This is barely an AHL team that they're rostering here in the NHL. And poor Connor Bedard would just get absolutely abused. Absolutely abused. And shame on Carl Davidson for that. But moving back to Mike Greer, he saw a team. He saw the issues. He fixes the issues. And now he's moving forward. And here he is in 2026. And he's able to go out and add players to his team. Do I think he's signed some good players this offseason? No, I think he's made a mistake with Jacob Trouba. That might go down as one of the worst contracts in the offseason. But he has managed to rebuild to a point now where San Jose is one of the most exciting teams to look at for the next few years. And it's funny when you have a superstar like Macklin Celebrini and you contrast that with a Connor Bedard. Two back-to-back number one overall picks, and you go, okay, these players are similar. Let's just look at, you know, the body language first. When you see a Macklin Celebrini, he's happy, he's jovial, looks like he's having a good time going to the rink. He has friends on his team. He's all over social media. Life is good. Life is good for this guy. He goes to Team Canada, one of the best players on their team. Not a lot going wrong in San Jose. Then you contrast that with Connor Bedard in Chicago, and you go, the guy's miserable. Even in his first year, not getting protected on the ice, not having that much fun off the ice, inundated with questions. It's just, there's no one there to protect them. Nick Foligno did a good job for a little bit, but there's only so much he can do as an aging veteran. It was sad to watch him, and it's gotten even worse. He's miserable in Chicago. He's putting up points. He's doing everything he can. But he hasn't played with a decent NHL caliber first line. What's the best first line he's had? Taylor Hall? And maybe Frankie Nizar lately? I don't know. When you look at Macklin Celebrini, he's playing with other lottery picks. He's playing with good veterans. He's playing with guys who put up 30, 40 goals. He's getting good NHL talent to play with. And Connor Bedard just gets put with these nobodies. And you can see it in his face. So if you're trying to rebuild your franchise and you're trying to create this culture, you nurture your star player. You try to make your star player happy and incentivize him to re-sign with your team. And San Jose has done that in spades. They are a destination now, where for the last maybe 5-6 years, it was 50-50 where this team was going to go. You know, the big guys are gone. How is this franchise going to react to not having Joe Thornton and Brent Burns and Joe Pavelski as the face of your franchise? Well, it took them all of 3 years to replace those guys with now Will Smith, Michael Misa, Macklin Celebrini, Jason Dickinson, and on and on and on. They are primed for contention for the next 10 years. It's a beautiful thing what Mike Greer has done, and he continues to knock it out of the park. So we should do a deeper dive with the San Jose Sharks to see just how great he has done, what a great job he's done. He should have been the GM of the year. It's fantastic to see the San Jose Sharks succeeding. Now we go to the Chicago Blackhawks, and I wrestled with this one. You know, I'll call a spade a spade. Maybe I was being a little hypocritical with the Chicago Blackhawks and giving them an easy pass because I wanted to do TV work for them. You know, I worked for them a few years ago with NBC, and I was a little critical of Connor Bedard's first season. When I would do games, I would call out, like, he needs some talent to play with. This is not fun for Connor Bedard. And the NBC execs, they came in, the Chicago Blackhawks higher-ups, they talked to the NBC execs, and they said, John needs to speak favorably of Chicago if he's going to do our games. And it was two separate entities, but the influence that they had at NBC, the guys at NBC said, you know what, you need to – rose-colored glasses, John. We got to look at the positives. But after 2-3-4 months, there was only so much I could say that was positive about the Chicago Blackhawks. Every segment started and ended with Connor Bedard, and that was it. Then you had the whole Corey Perry fiasco, and I made a comment on that, how Chicago blundered that. Just terrible media – PR mistake that they made of not coming out and protecting your player and squashing the whole rumors about Bedard's mom and all that crap. Well, I got suspended for that for 2 weeks, and I came back, and I tried to toe the line, but I guess it didn't work, and they fired me at the end of the season. And I gotten pretty good feedback, and everybody seemed to like my commentary, but it wasn't enough because I wasn't toeing the Blackhawk line. And after, you know, they won their Stanley Cups, and after the unfortunate scandal with the media or the internet guy, who was the video guy and Kyle Beach and, you know, reporting it and Quinville and Bowman, all that crap went out. When all that came out and everybody got fired, the Blackhawks had a decision on who to hire. And they went all, and I don't want to go down the road of whether you merit being hired or any of that crap, but they hired a lot of first-time hockey minds and a lot of people who you wouldn't associate with knowing how to run a hockey team. And, you know, men, women, black, white, whoever, Mexican, Hispanic, Indian, whatever. They hired a very diverse staff. And not a lot of people knew hockey, to be frank. And every decision they made after that was maybe not hockey-based, but trying to not step on anybody's toes. And I talked to a lot of people in the franchise who got fired, and they just said that franchise is a train wreck now. They treat the players like crap. They treat the former players like crap, all the Stanley Cup guys. They are doing whatever they can to repair relationships, but it's a train wreck. And I've said it time and time again. You can tell a successful franchise because they are run well from the top down. You very rarely get a Stanley Cup champion where the president's a mess and the GM's a mess and the coach is this and that and the players just take it upon themselves to win a Stanley Cup and they just do it. It comes from the top down. And based on the last 5 years of the Chicago Blackhawks and Kyle Davidson's tenure, you can tell that franchise is a train wreck. And I've skirted the issue here and there, but I'm done. I don't want that job anymore. So here we are. And I'm just going to burn bridges. Not really. I'm just going to call it like I see it. The Hawks are a complete and utter disaster. And they have been for the last 5-6 years. They have finished the highest they've finished in Kyle Davidson's tenure over the last 5 years. What is that, 28th or 29th? They've come the second or third last team in the NHL the last 5 years of Kyle Davidson's tenure as a GM. I get it. You know, you were tanking for Bedard. You get Bedard and you're still not there yet. And then you all of a sudden go for it and you sign Marc-Andre Fleury and Seth Jones and these guys to try to cobble together some season with the last season of Kane and Taves and everything. And then you tank again. And now here we are 4 or 5 years later. And it's like, where are we as a franchise? When you see how San Jose is improving, almost make the playoffs this past season, the excitement around that franchise, the community, everybody's excited for that team. And then you kind of compare that to the Chicago Blackhawks. And it's like, what happened? What happened with the Chicago Blackhawks that what didn't happen with the Blackhawks that is happening with San Jose? And it falls on Kyle Davidson's feet. And it's not like he hasn't had the same opportunities, because both of these teams have had lottery picks over the last 3, 4, 5 years. They've had the same draft picks and the same draft class and the same opportunity to draft the same players. When you look at San Jose's draft, I just mentioned who they drafted, you know, the Misas and the Dickinsons and the Michael Celebrinis and the Will Smiths of the world. When you look at Chicago, they're not drafting bad players. You know, obviously you get the gift of Connor Bedard in 2023. You get Oliver Moore, who's a decent player. The year before that, you get Korchinski and Frankie Nazar. Two really good NHL players. Sam Rinzell on defense, he's a good player. 2024, second overall pick, you reach for Artem Lashuvnov from Michigan State. Not sure that was the best pick at that time, but he's a good defenseman. They needed help on the back end, and they got him. He's a good player. They got Sacha Boisvert. I don't know much about him. Then 2025, you get Anton Frondell, who everybody was very excited about, and he had a good outing last year in his first NHL action. And this year, of course, you don't get anybody, really. But you get some lottery picks. You have some good young prospects. And in contrast to Mike Greer, what do you do with those prospects? Who do you bring in to play alongside these guys? I mentioned them earlier. No, absolutely nobody. Absolutely freaking nobody. You don't even bring in any muscle to protect the young guys. So when you go and play a game and you're a visiting team and you're coming into Chicago, what is your game plan? Well, I'm going to throw up 3 or 4 goals and then run them through the boards because there's nobody who will push back. Jared Tenorti? Yeah, right. Nick Foligno? Yeah, right. There's nobody there who I'm even remotely scared of. So Kyle Davidson coming into this season, he goes, my seat's getting pretty hot. You know, I'm a little nervous. Maybe we should go for it. Maybe I should save my job. And that's all this is. It's Kyle Davidson trying to save his job because he has done nothing in the first 4 years, his tenure as a GM, 5 years. And so he looks at the calendar, he goes, I need to worry about number one. So how do I do that? I had the 4th overall pick, another high draft pick. What do I do? We need some help in the back end. You know, we got rid of Seth Jones. Our leading point scorer is Louis Crevier, who is 25 points, not really that good. We need a puck-moving defenseman. The league thrives with puck-moving defensemen. We see it every Stanley Cup Finals. We see it throughout the regular season. Teams that have good puck-moving defensemen, they succeed. They win. That's just it. It's a very easy calculation to figure out. We don't have that in Chicago. We haven't had that in a long time. So he starts to scan. Okay, who do we got? Oh, Buffalo Sabres, Bowen Byram. He's going to be an RFA. Maybe they can't afford him. They're trying to figure out what to do with all these players. They don't have enough money. We're going to kick the tires on Bowen Byram. Wow. They got the new Finnish GM, Karmo Lekalukkalin, and he just throws out, I'm guessing, an insane offer to the Chicago Blackhawks. Give us your 4th overall, Louis Crevier, and when we have a deal. And Kyle Davidson, for whatever reason, goes, yeah, that sounds good. And Jarmo, he must have did a double take when Kyle Davidson said, yeah, that sounds good. So you're telling me, if I'm Jarmo Kukkalukkalin, I'm taking your leading point getter on the back end, Louis Crevier, who's, you know, not the worst defenseman in the world, but he's a big body defenseman who can move around the ice a little bit. And he's got a good, decent first pass out of the zone. Yes, he gets taken advantage of in the D zone because he's taller and he's like a poor man's Tyler Myers. And the number 4 pick overall, which I can use on a good young defenseman. And you'll take Bowen Byram from me? And by the way, Bowen Byram, whose trade capital and trade, his asset worth is as high as it's ever going to be. He got a lot of good ice time in the playoffs. He was protected by Rasmus Dahlin, so he wasn't even getting the hardest minutes. And you're gonna do this swap, a number 4 overall pick. By the way, of the number 4 overall picks over the last like 20, 30 years, the list of number 4 overall picks, there's some pretty damn good players on that list. just briefly, you got Will Smith from San Jose. You got Lucas Raymond. You got Luke Hughes. You got the aforementioned Bowen Byram, but Cale Makar, Brady Tkachuk, Mitch Marner, Sam Bennett, Chicago Blackhawks alumni, Seth Jones. All of these players were fourth overall pick. So for the Chicago Blackhawks to just get rid of that pick so flippantly, it's insane to me. It's negligence. You should be fired at that moment. The owner of the Blackhawks, gosh, what's his name? It's going to come to me when I'm done with this podcast. But he should have fired Kyle Davidson on the spot when he even presented that option to him. Hey, we're gonna trade the fourth overall pick. Oh, for who? So you're telling me who are we going to get with the fourth overall pick? Are you going to get Jason Robertson? Who are we getting with that fourth overall pick? And he says Bowen Byram. Like, are you nuts? Are you nuts to be able to breach that topic to your owner and president? Like, that, he should have been laughed out of the room. That's insane. And then just as I mentioned earlier, the leadership in Chicago is completely brain dead. So they see this opportunity and they go, yeah, that's good. Let's do that. Yeah, we need that. Bowen Byram, this is going to turn our team around. All of a sudden, we're going to be contenders. We're going to go from 30th in the league to first with Bowen effing Byram. Are you nuts? Are you absolutely smoking something that I don't know about? It's a stupid idea. It should have been laughed out of the room when it was presented to everybody. But nobody said boo. And so they pull the trigger and they make this trade. And sure enough, Buffalo drafts a defenseman who, mark my words, in 3 years will be better than Bowen Byram. And then Chicago has Bowen Byram now. And they got to sign him to a contract. And they go, well, let's make him the highest paid defenseman in the league right now. Why? Why are we paying Bowen Byram the most money? And I know people have said this before, but I need to reiterate this fact. You guys, this guy has not put up 50 points in the NHL. This guy has not played against the other team's first line consistently. He's always been second fiddle. When he was in Colorado, it was second fiddle behind Devin Taves and Cale Makar. When he was in Buffalo, it was behind Owen Power. It was behind Rasmus Dahlin. It was behind Samuelson. He's always been second fiddle. Why is he now making the most money out of every single defenseman in the NHL? $12.5 million. He makes the same as Connor McDavid. Are you nuts? So first they trade for this guy. Should have been fired, laughed out of the room, and just egged and water ballooned at every GM meeting in Florida. You idiot, idiot, idiot. But they didn't do that. And to just take another steaming pile of dump already on your massive barf of a trade, you sign him to a $12.5 million deal. Oh, but at least it's for 8 years, right? You know, at least we're going to get some term out of it. No, it's not for 8 years. We only sign him for 5 years, so he can still walk in a little bit. It's like, what are we doing? What is going on with this world? I don't understand. I don't understand how this is possible. In a world where, yes, the cap's going up, and we value puck-moving defensemen, it defies logic that this happened. But it did. And now the Chicago Blackhawks, who were 30th in the league last year, 3-0, and they don't have anybody on the roster that's going to be new this year, going to be very exciting. Well, they got Jordan Greenway, too, in the trade, who makes $4 million, by the way. The guy is way overpaid. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to bust out a competitive team because you got Bowen Byram for 6 years at $12.5 million? Like, you're drunk, man. Like, you're so stupid. It's so incredibly dumb that he did this. It makes me mad to the core. He should be fired. The president should be fired. Everybody should be gone. Non-equivocally, no answer. No, do not pass go. It's a bad decision. This franchise will stink now. And everybody was complaining when Seth Jones was on this team and his bad contract. Oh, Seth Jones, you paid him $9 million. You're saddled with this contract. Seth Jones looks like Paul freaking Coffey and Ray Bourque and every other good Hall of Fame defenseman wrapped up into one compared to Bowen Byram in this contract. A $12.5 million contract for a defenseman. This guy needs to put up 85, 90 points a year, be a stud defensively, and do everything, play 30 minutes a game. Do you honestly think Bowen Byram has the ability to do that? I think he's reached a ceiling. He's played on two really good teams in Buffalo and Colorado, and he's maxed out at 49 points. Yeah, but he hasn't got number one power play time. I don't care. I don't care. If he was that good, he would have gotten number one power play time. So now he's the guy. So we'll see what happens, right? My prediction is he's maxed out at 42 points. I bet you he gets 55 points. I bet you he's minus 32. And I bet you by year three, Chicago's trying to kick that contract to somebody else. It's just a terrible, terrible contract. You should be fired as a GM for doing this. And Kyle Davidson will be fired next year. Mark my word. This team will still suck next year. They will be so incredibly bad. They have no one on this roster still for Connor Bedard to play with. We got Frankie Nazer. Frankie Nazer. That's it. Oh, but we got Teuvo Teravainen. Oh, we got Andrew Mangiapane. Oh, we got these young guys. I don't give a crap. The young guys are good. I like Frondale. I like Boivert. I like Olivier Moore. I like Ryan Green. I like them. You have no good vets to play with them, idiots. You don't have anybody. Oh, Tyler Bertuzzi. Buddy, Bertuzzi's a third-line guy on a Stanley Cup team. So, suck on it, Chicago. You deserve it. All right, moving on. The final one. Pat Verbeek, the Anaheim Ducks. Can you say he deserves this? You know? You try to be a hard-ass GM. You try to, you know, play hardball when you're negotiating with the player, a good young player with Leo Carlson, who we saw what he can do in the playoffs. We saw what he can do last season. He's a great player. Number two overall pick in 2023, the same draft as Fantilli and Connor Bedard. So good player, good draft. And you want to lock him up long-term. You want to get that 7-year deal, 8-year deal. Can they do 8-year deals anymore? Or is that gone? Anyways, we'll call it a 7-year deal. You want to get him long-term. He's a good young player. He's 21 years old. You're doing your best. You're negotiating back and forth. You don't expect the team to come in. You've said in the press, going to match anything. If someone wants to throw him an offer sheet, we'll match it. I don't care what it is. Pat Verbeek doing his big man voice. Going to match anything. Well, Danny Briere heard that, and he said, suck it, Pat. We're going to throw him an offer sheet. You want to match it? You want to match this offer sheet, big boy? Put your money where your mouth is. Literally. 5 years, $18 million. Boom. Drop the hammer on him. Just on the table. Suck it. Do you really want to play this game? You take Cutter Gauthier from me? And this is where we're at. And shame on you, Pat Verbeek. Reports are they could have gotten this deal done earlier on, maybe last year, for 8 years, $9 million. They were negotiating with Leo Carlson as early as like a couple weeks ago in the $12 million, $13 million range, which is still insane for Leo Carlson. I think that's overpaying for Leo Carlson at 12 and 13. Do I think this is a good move for Philadelphia? Absolutely not. This guy is not worth $18 million. He's not worth it this year. He won't be worth it in 4 or 5 years. But the ball's on Danny Briere to do this. First of all, just acknowledging to his team, like, hey, kudos for making the playoffs. Kudos for winning a round. Now we're a competitor team. So I'm not going to sit on my hands and rebuild anymore and try to get draft picks like I did for the last two, three years. We are now in, you know, winning mode now. So he's going out and making a statement to his team, making a statement to his organization and fan base saying, I'm trying to win now. That's it. We have transitioned from rebuild to win now mode because this mortgages your future for the next 4 years. No more first rounders. They have Toronto's next year, but that's about it. So good for Danny Briere to just make a decision and go for it. Kudos to him. Do I think it's a good decision? No, I don't think Leo Carlson is that good. But shame on Pat Verbeek for letting this happen. For years now, he's been known as, oh, the hard-ass GM. Now, he's not going to play any games, much like Steve Yzerman is. Oh, you don't mess around with Pat Verbeek. He's going to bench you. He's going to sit you down. He's going to Trevor Zegras your ass. Times are changing. You can't do that. You can do it to a certain extent, but then you have to realize players have the power these days. I have the power, Key Man. Players have the power. And Leo Carlson is able to take offer sheets. And reportedly, there was 4 offer sheets sent to Leo Carlson. Other GMs around the NHL realized that, okay, the Anaheim Ducks have such and such amount of money. They have to sign Pavel Mintsikov. They got to sign Cutter Gauthier. They have to sign Leo Carlson. There's not enough money to go around. And so if we handcuff them by throwing them a big offer, they're going to have to let this player go, much like the St. Louis Blues did with the Edmonton Oilers. And they went out and they got those two players, Holloway and Broberg. So now here we are with the Anaheim Ducks. You're taking advantage of a team with a lot of good young talent and not a lot of cash, and you're making a run at them. Good, bad, or otherwise, like it or lump it, this is the way the system works. So Danny Briere takes advantage. And now what are we going to do with your Pat Verbeek? Leo Carlson is part of your future. He is part of the core that you need to win. You have built up, like I said, all these good young players. You have this core that could potentially win you a Stanley Cup. They were a good team in the regular season. They made some moves in the in the playoffs last year. They're fun to watch. They got Jackson Lacombe. They got the Mintikov on the back end. They got a good young goaltender, Lukas Dostal. And they have some really solid forwards who are coming up through the system. But the guy that stirs the drink is Leo Carlson. He's the thing that makes everything work. It doesn't work without him. Yeah, Cutter Gauthier is really fun to watch. Yes, you know, all these, you know, they got Granlund now, and they got the veteran Troy Terry who might miss this season. But Carlson is the guy. So what do? Do you match this contract for $18 million and maybe lose Cutter Gauthier, who could sign an offer sheet somewhere else, oddly enough, if there's not enough money to go around? Or do you let him walk for $18 million and get four first-round draft picks? And if Philadelphia's trajectory is where it's headed, those first-round draft picks will be later first-round picks. We're talking 20 to 30 range. And we all know those picks don't mean a thing. It's a crapshoot at that point. So shame on you, Pat Verbeek. If I'm a GM and I'm in his shoes, you obviously get the deal done earlier, but you take the draft picks. You do not match that. There's no way you pay $18 million to a Leo Carlson. Now, what does this do to the market? Because if Leo Carlson, a guy who, keep in mind, he's played three NHL seasons, his first season, 29 points, second season, 45 points, and last year he had 67 points. That's it. And he is going to be making $18 million next year. Like, that's insane. Guys in his draft class, Celebrini, he got 63 points and 115 points. Fantilli, 23, 54, and 59. Those guys are RFAs. What is there going to do? What is it? Oh, sorry, Bedard was in his draft class. My apologies. He had 61, 67, and 75. And those guys are both RFAs. So if Carlson is getting $18 million for 5 years, what are Bedard and Fantilli going to get? Because Bedard is light years, not light years, but he is better than Leo Carlson. He's already racked up over 200 points in the NHL, and he's only 20 years old, and he's playing with absolutely nobody, like I mentioned. Is his deal $20 million? What does this do to the market? That's what I want to know. Chicago, Kyle Davidson, good on you for not getting this deal done earlier. Look what happens now. Same can be said in Columbus. Then you got a guy like Slavkovsky who signed last year for 8 years, looking pretty good, Kent Hughes. Same kind of boat, 19, 20, 21, very similar points to a Bedard. So it's just mismanagement. It's just terrible, terrible GMing by these guys, and you're going to pay for it by losing your good young player. But the market now, I want to know from you guys, will we see a contract in the next few years, either from Fantilli, Celebrini, Bedard, that eclipses five years for $18 million? Because to me, that's a lot of money. That's wrapping up almost, 10, 20% of your salary cap space on one person? That's a lot of cake, especially for a guy who's not proven in a Leo Carlson. I know he's good, but 67 points last year. That's his high. That's a big risk for a Danny Briere, but you got to applaud him. So good on Danny Briere. Shame on you, Pat Verbeek. Kyle Davidson, you need to be fired yesterday. And Mike Greer, you should have a couple GM Jack Adam awards already. I don't know how. Am I butchering the GM of the Year award? That's not the Jack Adam. That's the coach. What's the GM of the Year award? Who knows? I don't care. He should be getting that award yearly because he's doing a fantastic job in San Jose. All right, everybody. That's it. Mea culpa for all the mistakes. It's been a couple weeks, you know, getting back into it, but I'm having some fun. I hope you enjoyed the show. I will talk to you guys later this week. We'll dig into some more trades, some more team movements. And yeah, it's good to be back. Cheers, everybody.